Stand up and be heard with Pete Dunne.
Stand up and be heard.
Weekdays at 3 p.m. East, noon West on POTUS.
Well, he was supposed to join us on Monday, but it's the new year for his people. And so it's now finally he's here. We missed him for 2 weeks and people are having Ritholtz withdrawal. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the author of Bailout Nation, How Greed and Easy Money Corrupted Wall Street and Shook the World Economy, and the founder of the Big Picture blog at Ritholtz.com. Barry Ritholtz is here at Ritholtz on Twitter. Happy New Year to you.
Why, thank you.
What did you do? Did you, you were tweeting, you were Facebooking, you were blogging, you
I
were
was
not
atoning in my own
You were
way.
Not.
Oh, no, that's how I atone.
No.
I atone
you
every day of the year.
You are not a good Jew because you worked plenty. You think that turning down media appearances is like an
you
appearance on our
You think that's work?
Show.
You call that stuff work? That's not work.
Well, no, you're saying, oh, I'm not gonna do Pete Show,
I just wasn't in the city.
I'll blog
that's all.
And tweet.
I just wasn't in the city. That's why I said
okay.
I wasn't on
right.
Pete's
show. All right, well, that's fair, because we wouldn't want you to call it. How are you, pal?
It's no fun calling. It's more fun being in here. So I could come in, I could see your shiny dome
right.
and the absurd hat that's on Alfred's head.
Talk
it
more
is
about.
A lovely hat. It is a...
Actually, it's... Alfred had something to fire back at you, Alfred.
Oh, I was
yeah,
going to mention...
Fire away!
Did you know you got humble-bragged?
I get humble-bragged all the time.
Do you get humble-bragged all
yeah,
the time?
Yeah.
Really?
Because... So
like
now,
officially.
Hold on. Explain
official...
what humble brag is.
So humble brag is when you say something that you know ostensibly is showing some humility, but in reality is a backdoor braggadocio.
Right.
And so,
like,
two
I looked
days...
terrible when I got recognized today. Like
no.
recognized wearing sweatsuit. Oh, how embarrassing! Stuff like
so,
that.
So look, I've been
and
doing.
And it's a Twitter handle that retweets. Humble brags.
Right, exactly.
And it's like followed by 241,000 people.
So I get pretty, great. I'm a pretty regular humble brag. Look, you guys know me. There's no pretense. I don't put up any walls.
You don't. That's true.
It's really the bizarrest thing.
Most
if you're not a full-time media personality, if what you do for a living isn't being in front of
He's
crowds
humble
of
bragging
people.
Right now.
Yeah.
No.
Just to be clear.
Well, if I really ranked, I would have some damn water here. Every day, instead, every time
Such
I'm here, instead
a diva
of
too. Can we get? Can someone? Can our intern, Adrian?
That weed is really strong. That, you gave.
That I gave
during,
you
during the break. That was strong.
I didn't give you that to you. That was my, my guy.
So anyway,
can we get Ritholtz something?
Just
Dustin?
Something wet,
Thank you.
Cold, fish-like.
So
look,
give him your self-esteem.
It, it's happened to me. I've been doing television. I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years. So the first time it happens,
humble
it's bread. Really disorienting.
Yeah, another humble brag.
That's not. That's not. It's a, this is
we
a
need
fact.
A buzzer.
I look. Part of my
humble brags are facts. They just don't need to be announced for all to see.
I'm putting into context the whole concept. Pete, how often when you're walking down the streets of New York does someone recognize you?
About once a day.
Is it that
really?
Much?
Once
yeah.
a day.
About once
see,
a day. Huh. Always a black guy.
Really?
Almost always.
The brothers love you.
Happened this morning.
That's outstanding.
Yeah. Because they a black. Here's the thing. They black people watch CNN,
mm-hmm.
and they
what?
Are more—
They don't watch Fox?
And they're more outgoing. They're not—like, white people, if they see you, they might not say something. Black people, they see you just seemingly just say something.
Especially, I find what, in New York City, like, there's an unwritten rule. You don't harass. Like, I remember walking down the street with a couple of friends from grad school. This is way back when. And someone goes by the other direction, and one of the girls says— And we're like halfway down the block if it happens. And one of the girls says, that woman, was that Jane Curtin? I go, yeah, that was Jane Curtin. Why didn't you say anything? Well, because I'm a New Yorker and that's how we
right.
roll. And the two of them run down the block and, give us your autographs. Just touristy nonsense. So back to the humble brag. If this is happening to you every day, you're used to it. Like, it happens infrequently, but when it does, and it probably happens once or twice a month, but in weird places,
right.
like at a urinal is like the last place I once. Oh, hi. Nice to
yeah,
meet you.
That's happened.
It's happened to me. It happened to me. This is true. Happened to me in an ice hotel in Helsinki. I'm like literally.
I didn't get recognized. The gentleman recognized my actual penis.
Is that what
yes.
it is?
But he didn't recognize me.
He must have been like a medical researcher.
Yeah, it was my urologist.
Right.
Right.
They're supposed to be bad with faces.
Yeah.
Like gynecologists.
I get recognized. When I get recognized by, I'll get have a white. Woman look at me and give me a double take, and that never happened before I was on TV.
Right.
I like to think that she's like, oh, he's cute,
But I think that she thinks, I think I've seen that guy somewhere. Right. And you get recognized when you're on TV a lot and not when you're. And I also get recognized a lot as Daughtry, as someone I'm not.
Right.
That happened to me last week.
You know where the crazy
place? I get Steve-O from Jackass.
Yeah, I could see that.
Humble brag.
I get that a lot.
All right.
I was at a humble brag.
And if you're waiting to pick up your luggage in the airport baggage area, for some reason you're just
I get recognized the most in the airport because CNN's on in the airport.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Shannon in Iowa, you're on with Barry Ritholtz.
Hey, Barry. I just had a quick question because I don't really know economic terms very well. I remember watching the Republican debates, the candidate debates with Santorum and Romney and Gingrich and everybody.
Uh-huh.
And Romney says to Gingrich at one point, isn't it your plan to drop capital gains to 0%? And Gingrich said, yes. And Romney said, under that plan, I would not pay any taxes. Does that mean then that he is part of that 47% that does not pay income tax if his only taxes he pays are capital gains?
Capital gains are income taxes, right?
Capital gains are a tax on investment, not on income, which is why they're taxed at 15%.
I understand how they work.
But it's not considered. Income is considered wages, salaries, tips, bonuses, etc.
So then what does Mitt Romney pay taxes on?
He probably is paying taxes primarily on gains from investments, municipal bonds, things like or other sort of bonds. Those are all investment gains.
I think I don't know.
Who's paying him a salary? Answer that question. What salary?
Guy has some speaking fees.
Okay, so that's usually a 1099. That's not a salary. But same thing.
But those are still income taxes. And so is the question? I don't know if Shannon's getting at this. I'm getting at this. Then doesn't that mean Mitt Romney doesn't? Isn't he part of the 47%?
It depends on what he's getting paid. That's income. If he's getting paid to give speeches, and when you're running for office, and he's been running for office, this is the second presidential term in a row, so he probably hasn't gotten speaking fees other than, you know, $50,000 plate dinners or whatever it is. The leaked video was that. That's not income. It sounds like the bulk of what his compensation is investment income, not employment, not wages, not salary.
Well, just to be clear, I'm not accusing him of that. That was exactly his own words during the debate, was that I would pay zero income. I would pay zero taxes if you reduce capital gains to zero.
Then if that's what he said, then that's telling you that the vast majority, if not all of his income, is coming from investment portfolio, not from salary, wages, tips, bonuses, etc. That's a good question. Thanks for bringing
that up. Thank you, Shannon. Kevin in Phoenix, you're on with Barry Ritholtz. Now you are. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Kevin.
I am a true independent, meaning I don't vote for anybody just because they have a D or an R after their name.
Good for you.
I have views that are liberal. I have views that are conservative. Mm-hmm. But this particular election, let's face it, really just boils down to the debt. Whoever you vote for, you have to believe that that individual is going to reduce the debt.
No, you don't. Why do you have to believe that?
I think it boils down to employment, jobs.
I think it's actually subtler than that. It's more nuanced. We're trying to reduce it to a bumper. But that's a good point to bring up about debt. Let me let you in on a little secret about debt when it comes to talking about it as a Democrat or a Republican. It turns out the guys who talk about it are neither a D nor an R. It depends if they have the White House or not. And I'll give you a real specific example. When Reagan was in office, the Republican Reagan in the White House, the Democrats in the Congress would say, he's a big spender, he's busting the budget, he's a deficit spender, and then he leaves. And then when same thing happened with in the beginning of Clinton's a big tax increaser, but he's spending a lot. Deficit. It really depends if your guy is in the White House or not. Think about what the Democrats said about Bush. Think about what the Republicans are saying about Obama.
Think about what Dick Cheney said.
Deficits don't matter. Right. Until they're out of the
White House. Yeah.
And then the deficits matter. So I'm not going to tell you it's 50-50 right down the middle, but I could tell you if you're going to ask, give me a quote and say, is this person a Democrat or Republican, regardless of the date, my answer is going to be what's more important is their party control the White House.
Back to Kevin's point, independent analysis shows that Mitt Romney will rack up more debt and deficit than President Obama.
If you're letting facts and numbers get in the way of the narrative.
Who do you think, from what your analysis, from what you've read, from what you've heard, Who has a better plan to reduce the deficit, Mitt Romney or President Obama?
Well, again, a true independent's going to look at the fact that Obama, in his current term as president, hasn't reduced the debt. He's done nothing but increase it. He's increased it more than any president from George.
But he hasn't. But the thing is, he hasn't. I mean,
first, the Congress is the one who authorizes this.
Second,
there's certain things that he's a big spender about. He's a big spender about the stimulus. But when you look, you can't take a snapshot. You have to look at the moving picture. The moving picture is, no matter who got elected in 2008, the deficit was going to explode. You're in a free fall. You're in a huge recession.
Yeah, we all agree on that, right, Kevin?
Yeah, to a certain degree, I agree. Yes.
Now, the stimulus, the American Recovery blah, blah, blah Act, that was $800 billion. That's all on Obama. You can't blame anybody else for that or credit anybody else for that.
Right.
But when you look at what happened with the free fall in taxes, if you look at all of the policies that were in effect before he came into office, the ongoing cost of the wars, the ongoing cost of the Bush tax cuts, Medicare, Section D, blah, all that stuff. Yeah. It went up more under him. But no matter who gets elected, it's going to go up more under them because these are policies that already exist. Yeah.
I think you can also blame Obama for the Afghan war, which he escalated, and that's spending that's not paid for as well.
Yes,
I think
correct.
He could have done a lot more to bring an end to that war.
But keep in mind that of the two wars that we were fighting, those are actually where the attacks on the United States originated.
Well, yeah, but that's
not Iraq.
I know, but he could have. Ended that war, which would have ended that spending.
Yeah, you're probably right. He could.
Kevin, thanks. Go ahead, Kevin.
I just think in the end analysis, especially with the three debates coming up, all the ads we're going to see between now and November, whatever person convinces the true independent, the votes they actually need to become elected that are left, that people could be swayed, that are persuadable.
In Florida and Ohio.
Or any state for that matter.
Well, those are the ones that really are going to make it.
Yeah, true. That will decide it. Are going to go with who they actually are convinced by that's going to reduce the debt.
I don't think so, though. I just don't think people think that much about the debt as much as you're saying that they do because you don't feel
it. I'm talking about an educated independent because the reason being, because we know that nobody's going to bail out the United States. If we go broke, no other country's going to come help the United States.
China, Japan. Anybody who wants to be able to sell stuff to us.
Well, they're not going to bail us out. They're going to buy us. That's the difference.
Good luck shipping it home. I mean, remember what happened in the 80s when the Japanese were running around buying Rockefeller Center, buying this, buying that. Then their economy collapsed and they sold everything for 10 cents on the dollar. Hey, I hope China comes in here and buys everything. And when they collapse, we can buy it back for pennies on the dollar from them also.
All right, Kevin, good talking to you. Barry, it holds.
But let's talk a little bit about.
Move that microphone down a little bit for you.
Oh, yeah. How's there you go, buddy. Better. I want to talk about the issue weeks ago. Yeah. I had such a crazy dream last night. I'll tell you later.
Is it too dirty to say in the air?
No. It's just I woke up in the middle of the night in the middle of the storm.
Last night, there was a huge storm here.
Huge storm. And all I could picture was a sinking boat. That's what woke me up. Like swamped by seas.
Because you have a boat that's on the water.
But it has nothing to do with that. It was. I'm thinking more metaphorically. Oh no, the boat, the ship of state has gone down. To Kevin's point, like that's how I woke up at literally 1:30 in the morning. But hold what he said aside. Whenever we take really complex issues, why is someone going to vote for the president? Who's going to win? What is the data behind it? You know, when we make it really, really, really simple, hey, you boil it down to debt. It's never one thing. It just never is. There's the number of factors that change and morph and shift, and likability, trustworthiness, competency. There's a whole. By the way, some of those things are just thresholds. You got to get past those. Once you get past that, then other factors come into play.
I disagree a little bit, and I.
But it's how often is it just guns and butter? You know, that's
for a lot of people, it is definitely abortion, and for me, it is not abortion. But for me, it definitely is. And I was having this argument with my dad.
How many people?
Like, don't you care? Listen, I have two. Listen, I have two daughters. Uh-huh. Okay, and if Romney wins, he'll be able to appoint two Supreme Court justices that could overturn Roe v. Wade. And I'm not worried as much about abortion as I am and access to it. And I am, and it's very important. But things like birth control, I mean, what the Republican Party is moving towards in terms of restricting
Dude,
birth.
Dude, that ship has sailed. I think that you're looking the wrong direction. You know what? If they change the birth control laws in Arkansas, that's for the people in Arkansas to vote if Roe v. Wade is ever overturned. But when you look at a map of the United States and you look at where most of the population is, primarily on the coasts and the major cities, it ain't happening there. You're not going to see Roe v. Wade overturned in California, in New York, in Florida, in Massachusetts, in Connecticut, in Delaware, in Washington State, in Oregon. You know, it's a great distraction issue. And then when you look at the vast majority of people, when you see the polls, the vast majority are in favor of just leaving Roe v. Wade as it is. There's a swath that says, let's modify it, let's reduce it, let's do what we can.
I'll give you another one then.
And by the way, where do the people who are really anti-Roe v. Wade, where are they located? Is it California and Wisconsin and Ohio and other swing states? Or is it states that are voting the way they're voting and it's a distraction?
What about this? I am so concerned about the future in terms of climate change, and Mitt Romney wants to drill everywhere and end subsidies for wind and solar, et cetera. And
but keep the subsidies for oil and gas? Because we have massive
of
subsidies.
Course. But and Obama wants to do it all, and a lot of which I still think it's a bad idea. But nonetheless, I mean, that's a real big issue for me.
Right.
Like, as a voter, not as
a someone with kids who wants there to be a planet for them. Is
well,
that what
it's not even about my kids as much as it's like almost a Native American idea of you're supposed to preserve and make better the land in which you're given.
Well, that's really easy. You slap a dollar a gallon gas tank or like the Europeans have done, a $5 a gallon gas tank, and you burn a lot less gas. You also drive crappy little cars and pay up for
back to my point. I mean, that's an issue for me. Those are two issues I gave you.
But there's a
you
real
were saying that. I mean,
there's a real simple fix for that, but nobody wants to do it.
I know, but you're not.
It's a painful fix. No one's willing
to do it. I hear you, but I'm not. I don't want to even go down. I'm still talking about what you were saying about nobody really cares about one or two. And I'm telling
but
you, those are two.
Okay,
for
so
me
there's
as a
an
voter.
Issue that who you vote for is irrelevant.
I disagree.
Do you think it makes a difference?
Absolutely. No.
So let's assume Obama gets elected.
I definitely think Obama.
What is he? It makes a little bit of a background difference, but what new legislation? What new anti-global warming legislation?
He brings us a lot closer to a point where Congress can put a penalty on pollution. And a tax on pollution.
That's not going to happen with
I
Congress.
Disagree. It you might not happen in the next 2 years, but I absolutely think that—
How about in his second term? You think he's going to get through Congress strengthening the EPA,
if he can
punishing
Americans
polluters?
That cap and dividend is something that everybody wins on, yeah, I think it's possible.
And you don't think Romney would go down that—
No way. No
but,
way.
By the way, I find
Romney
it,
will be
don't you
paid
find
for
it
by
fascinating?
The oil companies.
So, by the way, cap and dividend, who originated that concept? Where did that come from?
I don't know who originated it.
Which political school of thought?
I don't know.
That's a very conservative.
Alaska?
No, that's a very conservative free market. Hey, let's not regulate it. Let's allow it and tax it and allow it to be traded. I find it amazing that things like, look, the whole Romney, someone called it O'Romney Care. The whole Obamacare came out of the Heritage Foundation, a right-wing think tank. Cap and trade comes out of the.
But
so now
cap
you have,
and trade is different than cap and dividend.
So what is how does cap and dividend differ?
People get a dividend. They get a payment. They get money back. Let me try to explain it to you.
All right, that
you're thinking of cap and trade. I'm thinking of cap
that's
and
what
dividend.
I'm thinking.
I think people who are against
I'm
cap, and trade, cap and trade would could be convinced to be for cap and dividend. I don't think this president can convince people very much though. Obama, I mean.
Well, if he chooses to, what's been so bizarre about this president? What's so bizarre about this president after running one of the most effective—
A market-based way to reduce CO2 emissions without reducing household incomes. It caps fossil fuel supplies, makes polluters pay, and returns revenue to everyone equally.
How does it return to everyone?
I have no idea.
What's amazing about this president,
I just more know I than, like it.
More than the biggest surprise about him was that here was this guy with incredible oratory skills, with a great communicator, the likes of which, you know, other than Clinton and Reagan, this country doesn't really see all that often. Mm-hmm. And then once he was elected, that the bully pulpit was never used. He just kind of disappeared into the White House and thought, well, I'll do a radio show every week.
I disagree with it. He used the bully pulpit all the time. He didn't use it effectively. For example, he went up.
Well, what's the difference between, you know, the difference between someone who can't read and doesn't read is the same thing.
Oh, he did use it, just not well.
Isn't that surprising? A guy who's such a great communicator failed to use use it effectively.
Because he talks to people as opposed to having a conversation with people, I think. And we learned that when Clinton kind of had a conversation with the crowd in Charlotte. I mean, I think Obama's obviously a very effective communicator and good listener and big reader.
Uh-huh.
But the idea that he couldn't explain the Affordable Care Act in a way where it's interesting because I've always thought it's just so interesting that when you break down what the Affordable Care Act does, it pulls through the roof. People love it.
Right. But they don't know. They don't know what it is.
They say, no, I'm against Obamacare. But when you say what it does, yeah, I'm for that. I'm for that. I'm for the parts, but not the sum.
Right. That's because they've done.
That's because they didn't. And that's what I'm
talking
about.
Look, I'll take it a step further. It's not just Obama. I think the Democrats have done a really lousy job responding to the idea that government has little or no role in the life of a country. I mean, stop and think about what the government does really well and how often do you see people come out and talk about that. The whole idea of the tax pledge and let's drown it in the bathtub, there hasn't been an adequate response. That's not just Obama. That goes back to Clinton. That goes back to other people. But it's been pretty soft. You know, I love NASA. I think NASA is great. I think most people who've gotten student loans appreciate the opportunity. I think, and those are government guaranteed. I think anybody who's ever been in a disaster and has been rescued in some way by FEMA appreciates the things that only the government can do. And yet, I'm not looking to set up a new department of PR. You would think that people who are running the government would have a little smarts and say, hey, here's what when the country does something right, here's what the government has done for you. I just never see
that. Yeah, but when they do that, sometimes you have to explain that. Like the government spent $20 million on signs promoting the recovery.
That's a rounding error. $20 million is a meaningless number in a country where the government is spending $4 trillion
a
year.
I know, but it's a very effective talking point. Like, they spent $20 million explaining what they were doing. Bush did this, by the way, all the time.
0.0001%.
I hear you, but
by the way, anybody who says stuff like that, they're a propagandist. Kick them in the teeth and move on to the next person. That's just nonsense. By the way, that's taking advantage of the fact that people are somewhat innumerate. It's a $14 trillion.
So condescending.
It's a $14 trillion economy. The government is spending $3.5-4 trillion a year. $20 million ain't pencils. It ain't toilet paper to the government. It's nothing. You cannot talk about this like it's your family. Well, let's see. My mortgage is $1,800 a month, and my car payments are $399 a month. Oh my God, $20 million, that's a lot of money.
I wish the people that are listening right now that vehemently disagree with you would call
866. I won't talk to them. They're too stupid to speak to. I'm sorry.
Don't do that.
We don't do that. We don't have time to waste people who can't count the number of zeros that follow a number. This is a dumb conversation. I won't have it.
I know, but that's what's wrong with liberals.
No, first of all, I'm not a liberal.
I know, but you're being liberal by doing
that. No, I'm not. If you don't understand basic math, go back to school. I cannot explain to somebody why $20 million out of $4 trillion is nothing. It's 0.0001%.
It'd be great if you tried, though, here.
You know what? Never teach a pig to sing. It wastes your time and annoys the pig.
Alfred?
What, in terms of the pig?
Yeah.
I think it depends on what type of pig it is and how good the teacher is.
Never teach a pig to sing. It wastes your time and annoys the pig. If you don't understand the context of $20 million out of $4 trillion, I can never explain anything to you. I'm amazed you can even dial a phone.
Do you pay attention to polls?
I just had this conversation this week. I look at two different sets of data. One is Real Clear Politics, all polls, which basically takes an amalgam of every poll right. with the assumption that some have biases, some have flaws. But when you take the collective of it,
and then Ezra Klein aggregates that on Wonk Book every morning.
Well, that's RCP. I look at that. I actually go to Real Clear Politics, and then Nat Silver's 528. You got to give credit to the guy who's been the most accurate electoral college forecaster for the past two.
What about our friend
Rasmussen? No. Has been the outlier. He's plus 2% Romney. The whole rest of the He's the most.
Alan Lichtman's 13 keys. Are you familiar with him?
Vaguely. Yeah.
All right.
Bob in New Jersey, you're on with Barry Ritholtz.
Are you going to give me the $20 million nonsense?
Go ahead, Bob.
Well, no,
it's an old Howard Stern trick. Go ahead.
Right.
Ritholtz is leaving.
I don't really see what the relevance is to the size in relation to the federal budget. I think the
if you understood the relevance of size, we wouldn't have this conversation. But since size is something you can't wrap your head around, we can't have this conversation.
Well, no,
it's $4 trillion. You know how many zeros? It's four followed by 12 zeros. 20 million is not 0.1%, not 0.01%. It's a millionth of a percent of it. It's a meaningless.
Bob,
you have any idea how much? What?
Turn off Red Holt's mic. Go ahead, Bob.
That's not the question. The question is whether or not you can, you can have an effective advertising campaign with $20 million. Can the government effectively,
in terms of promoting the Recovery and Reinvestment Act,
with $20 million? Like, why can't they effectively advertise for $20 million?
Thanks for calling,
Brian in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, she has the same mathematics that my wife has. She has to buy something because it's on sale.
No, that's a different. That's a false. By the way, that's a false equivalency. Logic is saying when you say I'm going to buy this at $100 because it was originally $150, it's off 33%. The reality is you're spending 60% more than if you spent nothing. What I'm saying is $20 million out of $4 trillion.
Hey, you're right.
Is a gnat's fart in the
wind. Wow! Did he just give an amazing answer like he's answered that accusation a number of times?
It's $20 million here, $20 million there, 20
and pretty
million
soon
here,
it's still no money. The old joke,
Josh
Kirk,
in New Jersey.
That Kirk, what's his name? Said
Dirksen.
Kirk
Cameron,
said,
I think.
A billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon you're talking real money. That's how large. And that was 40 years ago.
A billion here, a billion there. Soon you're talking. Josh in New Jersey.
$20 million is around the air, man. I agree with you 100%.
No, that's no fun.
And to be completely honest, I don't think it's even enough to completely promote their cause.
Wow. Well.
Look, the standard operating procedure, anytime you're doing any work in public, brought to you by, I still remember seeing the You Carry stupid things when they were working on the highway. The Carry administration.
Uh-oh.
Upgrading the highway. Every state, city, everybody does it. It's such a teeny tiny thing. It's almost like, should we not rename the street because of the cost of the signs? Again, it's a rounding error. Now, if you want to talk about where government is wasting money, I got a laundry list.
All right.
So
here's
why I can't talk about $20 million. So look what's going on with the F-35.
Exactly.
I mean, you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars.
Let me take a break. Barry Ritholtz is here, at Ritholtz on Twitter. And we're going to come back. We're going to talk about that, what he just mentioned, as well as QE3, what Barry thinks of that. We'll be right back.
The people stand up on POTUS.
All right. We are back here. Barry Ritholtz is in studio at Ritholtz.
Hey now.
Good morning, everybody. Do you listen to Howard?
I used to before he went off the air, and now he's on satellite. And when I'm in a place where I have satellite.
You're on satellite right now.
I know, but when I'm in a place where I have satellite.
You're not a SiriusXM
subscriber?
I have
it on Dish, and I have it in my car.
But you're not a... Okay.
I have it on my Dish at home, yeah. And I have it in my car.
And you don't listen to Howard in the car?
I tend to, in the morning, I'm listening to Bloomberg Radio on the way to work, and on when I'm out doing a long drive, I usually throw on The Vault or Coffee Shop
Music.
Or something like that.
Love me some Coffee Shop.
Yeah, Coffee Shop's great.
I like Classic Rewind and Vinyl. What is it, Classic Vinyl?
Deep Vinyl. Mm.
Deep Vinyl.
Deep Cuts.
I only listen to POTUS.
Such a sucker.
So, best resources for news and politics, for sure.
There you go. So what do you want to talk? What else do you want to talk about? You want to keep talking politics? I got some crazy data points on politics if you're interested.
You were telling me some of them on the air. I don't care about John Kerry.
Well, no. Here's a fascinating
data point.
You're
telling me that John Kerry. Okay, go ahead.
So there have only been two presidential candidates to get a negative post-convention bounce. One is John Kerry.
Oh, you mean
the other is Mitt Romney?
I'm sorry. I thought you meant John Kerry got a post-convention bonus after he spoke at this convention. I was like, why would
no,
I?
No, no.
Why would
when he
even
was
asked that,
you
question?
May not remember, but in 2004
no,
he
remember.
Was a presidential
I remember,
candidate.
I remember. Yeah.
His convention was pretty sort of the way the Republicans were this year. Mm-hmm. It was a poorly run, disorganized floor fights. You know, he didn't have Ron Paul, but same sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. He got a not the best speaker there. There was some guy that you may remember named Barack Obama. Did a nice job. Kerry got a negative bounce, proceeds to get shellacked in the election. So we only in the past half century, we only have two samples. One is Kerry and the other is Romney, who got a negative post-convention.
How
bounce.
Important are iPhone sales to economic growth? The J.P. Morgan economist made a big deal. Paul
yes,
Krugman wrote about this
yeah,
in a way.
Kinda,
and by the way, I saw a statistic yesterday. Apple has more. Is it
the iPhone market? Is worth more than Microsoft. Is basically.
But Apple has more money
$104 billion
than like
dollars.
Spain, Portugal,
yeah,
and Ireland
combined.
Yeah,
they got a boatload of money.
How much?
$105 billion in
oh,
cash.
I thought it was way more than that.
Now, by the way, if $20 million is not a lot of money, $105 billion is a boatload of money.
What is $20 million to $105 billion?
So $1 billion, let's you round it, $100 billion, 1% of $100 billion is a billion, 1%. 20 million to 100 billion is a 20th of that. I'm sorry, a 50th of that.
Can you do a grains of sand analogy?
I would have to do some math and figure out the volume of a grain of sand relative to something.
But
it's 1/50th of 1%. 20 million to 100 billion is 1/50th, 1/50th, 50, of 1%. You're talking to 100 billion. Now, to get to a trillion, you got to do 10 times as much as 100 billion, and then you got to do four.
Nicole in Texas, you're on with Barry Ritholtz.
Hey, I've got 2 points. My first point is I think it's kind of irrelevant that you're looking at this comparatively like it's a rounding error, like 50 million is nothing. I own my own small business. If I had $50 million to advertise, I'd advertise the
people
hell.
Always personalize.
All right,
it.
So let's like, let me ask you a question. What is your revenue in your business?
No.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. Let's assume her revenue is $2 million. We're talking half of a cent. Who cares? It's half a cent out of $2 million. It's a meaningless. It's a penny. It's nothing. That's my point. That when you're dealing with hundreds and hundreds and thousands of billions of dollars. Yeah. $20 million is a penny, a tenth of a penny.
QE3. We heard about it last week. I know you've probably talked about it, but we didn't get you on it. So what is this going to do, and when will it do it? And just the only thing that people understand fundamentally concerned about when the Fed takes action is that their money's going to be worth much less. Inflation's going to go up. That's what people believe.
Well, so far we have had no inflation
since food prices and gas prices have gone up.
Well,
and
food prices have primarily gone up because of droughts and shortages, not because of inflation. Mm-hmm. Gas prices have been between $80 and $100 for the past couple of years. You've
marijuana.
Had a spike. You've had a collapse. You've had there's a couple of factors into it. Everybody forgets. From 2001 to 2007, the value of your dollar fell 41%. From 2007 to today, it's been fairly stable against a basket of foreign currencies. All right, so you could really blame Alan Greenspan for ultra-low rates during a post-boom period that really—
Why did he argue keeping interest rates so low in good times?
My personal theory is that he just loved the adulation. That the traders had figured out how to manipulate him, that every time he
But there's other people that make decisions, not just the Fed chairman.
He's the most influential, right? And so you basically get a bunch of people who are supposed to be countervailing balance to him, but, it's rare to get a vote of non-confidence. There's a tendency to defer to the guy at the head of the table. So Greenspan takes a lot of blame for what took place. Or credit, however you want to do it. I give him a lot of blame. Here's what QE3 does. First, the Fed is committed to buying $40 billion, not million, billion, $40 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities. on an open-ended basis, meaning maybe it lasts a year, maybe it lasts 5 years, we don't know. And what that does, when you're buying these mortgages, you're essentially driving rates lower, driving mortgage rates lower. The criticism of this is, well, the people who aren't buying houses, it's not like they're not buying houses because rates are too high. They're not buying houses because they don't have the down payment, they don't have the credit, they don't have the job, they don't have the income. That's why they're not buying houses. They have too much debt. They have blah, 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 blah. But there's only so many levers the Fed has to pull. And if you've read Bernanke's speeches or listened to him speak over the past few years, he's essentially said, we're limited in what we can do. It's really up to Congress. If you want to really see more traction, Congress has to attack this problem. I'm doing all I can do, but don't be surprised that we can't work miracles. We can slow the bleeding. We could get the patient to the hospital, but you guys have to do the surgery.
Still don't get it.
So let's continue. So if you're buying $40 billion, normally the Fed isn't buying this stuff. If you're buying $40 billion worth, when you buy a bond, theoretically, if you buy enough bonds, the rates go down because you're sending the price up, right? So, and if you sell enough bonds, the rates go up and the price goes down. It's in just a simple inverse relationship. I don't mean you or I. I mean, if the Fed goes out and buys $100 billion worth of bonds, rates go down. If they buy $480 billion worth of mortgage-backed bonds, that'll drive mortgage rates lower. It's just basic. When lots and lots of people are buying bonds, rates go down. When lots and lots of people are selling bonds, rates go up.
I was reading yesterday that homes are not valued what they should be. They should be valued now more than they are generally.
Sure, we can get into that. I love that.
But I just feel like on that, I know nothing about you know.
So when you talk about value,
I just feel like it should be based on supply and demand and where you live. How can it be so general?
Well, it is to some degree based on supply and demand and where you live, but you're always looking at alternatives. Well, you could buy a house or you could build a new one. What's the cost of building a new house relative to buying a house? What's the cost of renting relative to buying a house? There are a lot of different ways to look at it. The other way to look at it is, how are homes prices relative to median income? After all, you have to pay for the mortgage with your income, and for a long time, home prices and income the relationship was relatively stable. Starting around 2000, it started going higher. It went completely vertical. It actually began around 96. It started moving, you know, within a normal range, it started moving up, but in 2001, it just went crazy, and it peaked in around 06, and is coming down, and it's just above fair value right now, meaning, if the great bubble never happened, if the great housing boom and bust never took place, home prices today, relative to national incomes, are about where they were when this all started, 2001. The problem is, you have all these homeowners underwater, you have all these foreclosures, and if it wasn't for all the propping up of homes that the government has done through first-time home buyers tax credit, through really low interest rates, a perfect example. Over the past 2 years, the Fed has driven mortgage rates down so substantially that the same monthly payments for a mortgage today, purchase a home that costs 15% more than just 2 years ago. Same payments, but you could afford 15% more. That's from a housing analyst called Mark Hansen, who's done the math on this and says, see how, you know, rates are now 3.6 on a 30-year mortgage. They were 4.5 a year and a half ago. So think about what did $2,000 a month buy when rates are 4.6? What did $2,000 a month buy when rates are 3.6? Buys you 15% more.
Barry Ritholtz is here, crunching the numbers at Ritholtz. I'm at Pete Dominic. You can give a call and join the conversation, 866-967-6887. Everybody wants to still talk about numbers and so on. Let's get back a little bit to politics. Everybody wants to talk about your – and people are tweeting about this as well.
Uh-oh.
But Patrick in Florida, getting back to politics a little bit. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
Hey, just a quick question. Do you know if Julie Mason is single?
Julie is single, I think, but it's probably not for me.
I think so.
Yeah. anyway,
she, I can tell you this: Julie loves like real manly men. She was like you know, like policemen and firefighters and stuff. Like
are you she's into punk rock too?
And she's huge into punk rock. She used to date someone from a big band back in the early 90s.
She told you that, not me. I feel like it's so wasted to tell you that.
I can't remember. No, I actually knew who they were. I was a skater. I forget who they were. But anyway.
Well, I'll try to be more germane. Mitt Romney's comments about the 47% reminded me of an experience I had back in New Orleans about a decade ago.
Fix your phone. What can you do?
Let me see what I can do.
Without killing somebody.
How's that? Is this any better?
Oh, that's much better.
Yeah, perfect. Try again. Right.
It reminded me of a story we had in New Orleans about 10 years ago at Commander's Palace, which is a nice restaurant down there, and having lunch with a couple New Orleans businessmen through Louisiana guys, and they asked me as an out-of-stater what I thought about Louisiana, and I was a little perturbed, I guess, and not very happy in my situation, so they said, well, I think it's kind of dirty down here, and people are less educated, and there's a lot of racism. And they struck on the word racism over all the other ones as a horrible thing to hear. And they said, racism? Well, where are you from? And I said, I'm from New York. They said, New York? We've been to New York. Y'all separate y'all out up there. We live and work with our, and then they use the N-word. And I thought, I never forgot.
I'm more offended by our than the N-word.
Can I tell you, I had an experience in Richmond, Virginia with the same thing. At a lunch table, this is 100 years ago with a bunch of guys, and the N-word comes out with, you know, we're white and black guys sitting at the table, and the New York Jew boy ducks under the table because I'm waiting for the shooting to start, and everybody starts laughing, and I kind of just peek up over the table. Hey, listen, where I come from, them shooting words. And they just think it's hysterical. That, you know, that's how we talk down here. Oh.
But when you're Jewish, don't you think that that you know that if you weren't there, if they didn't know you're Jewish, that type of rhetoric? And it's funny. A lot of times, Jewish people have this experience because someone will say something anti-Semitic, not knowing that someone's Jewish. You can tell when someone's a different color or another minority.
Yeah, but then you would think you would be a little more circumspect with the N-word. But it's just so much.
Well, what's your point? What's your point?
Because it seems
why
so
are you
natural.
Bringing this up? Maybe I missed something.
I brought it up is because it seems so natural for them to discuss sort of like a division among races, and it seems so natural for Mitt Romney to discuss a division amongst people's incomes.
Great recovery. That was awesome, the way you brought
that
back.
Well, that's the point he was trying to get
to.
Yeah,
no, that's awesome. I like that. I don't know. I haven't figured out Mitt Romney. I'm perplexed by him. I'm a little...
Well, what do you think? We haven't asked you about what you think and who the 47% are. I mean, what do you think of this video and what he said? I mean...
So I'm of two minds with it.
Okay.
The first part of it is he's doing a sales pitch to people to get money out of them. And if you've ever listened to salespeople, they'll say anything. That's the first thing, which excuses to some small degree what he says. The second part is schmuck. It's 2012. You don't think anything you say, even behind closed doors, is not going to get out? You know, it's an astonishing naivete that to think that you could. But he hasn't backed away from it. Maybe he really thinks. See, I don't believe he really believes it. I think he said it.
Well, you know what?
To squeeze
I think,
money out of people because he thought that's what he wants.
That number, though. That number. That's a new number.
46.4 is the actual data point. That's the people who don't pay federal income tax, many of whom don't pay income tax
I have to think, and I'm speculating here, trying not to do that, but I have to think that Mitt Romney had heard this number a lot because clearly he's paying attention to the right-wing blog and so on, and the number 53% and that whole Tumblr thing. And I have to think that he didn't know who the 47% are because
that's the
47% are old people who are going to vote for him who are not victims
I think he's slowly losing the older vote. I think the
people aren't going to not vote for him because the people that he's talking about, that are going to vote that actually are going to vote for him, they're still going to vote for him because people don't think that they're dependent on government or that they don't think that collecting Social Security
no people can when tell you're retired if they live and
is
die
being a victim.
That's true, but
they think
that's
I
who
paid into that my
to.
Entire working.
Right. That's
life.
Not an entitlement. That's an insurance payout. But that's, you know.
But nobody that worked their entire life, retired, and collects Social Security and doesn't pay federal income taxes, see themselves as dependent on government or.
But
or,
he's describing them in that way.
Yes, but they're not going to see. They're not.
I'm not
going
sure.
to count themselves.
Did you catch Obama on Letterman last night?
I saw the excerpts.
I put it up on the blog only because. He's just so smooth and deals with this stuff. So, I mean, after 4 years of being president, you should really be an excellent public speaker. And even Bush, who we know has suffered some, you know, verbal foibles, he could get in front of a room and you know, amuse and dazzle people. Mm-hmm. When you see his command and his ability to interact with Letterman, it's that's really the juxtaposition against the 47%. I'm far less willing to blame Romney for throwing bad numbers out there because I know what he was trying to do. He was trying to close those guys. He was trying to say, yeah. All right, everybody in this room, you paid $50,000 a plate to be here, but I need you to write bigger checks for me because this guy's kicking my butt. Although back in May, it was head-to-head, and it looked like it was anyone's game. Now it's a slightly different situation. So when to me the mistake wasn't what he's saying something he doesn't believe. All these guys do that. To me, the mistake is thinking that I could say something stupid behind closed doors. And in 2012, it's not going to get out there.
The other really important point that's been made over and over by a number of people yesterday.
Well, I have to say, I love the somebody tweets. I nobody said there would be math. That's hilarious.
Is that what you were laughing at?
That's what I was cracking up. No one said there would be math on POTUS
today.
Yeah,
I zoned out.
If you make $50,000 a year, $20 million is equal to one of a buck. A buck. So just to understand what we're talking about. That's another tweet.
I saw somebody today wrote.
$4 trillion to $20 million is $50,000 to a dollar.
All right, forget about that. What I was going to say. I want to move on. Barry Reardhall's here. The other big point that was made is that the earned income tax credit, which is a Republican policy with a lot of Democratic support, is what created a situation that that has so many people paying less federal income tax.
No, it's also a great program.
This conservative Republican program, the earned income tax credit, makes it so that people will want to work and not want to take a handout. People always hear, what would you do?
It's better than welfare. It's better than getting
welfare,
a handout. You basically say, if you work, look, you don't have to pay taxes up to this level.
Right.
Bush's tax cuts actually doubled, was it the child tax credit, the earned income tax? Thanks to those tax credits,
a lot of
people who are off the federal income tax rolls but working, that's a Republican policy.
Yeah, I mean, they created the situation where a lot of people aren't paying taxes by cutting taxes and creating tax credits. And now they're saying, this is a terrible situation. These are moochers. But they created it. That kind of hypocrisy is like, and the bad thing is, guys like me on the left, I love those ideas. A lot of those are great ideas so that people can move up the ladder.
So
it's a good
you're engaging,
policy.
You're falling into a classic error. You think that the people behind these memes that circulate are being intellectually honest, right? Look, I went through this.
I do. I really don't
believe that Mitt Romney understands who those 47% are. Look, let me give you my favorite example. I have a post going up on this tomorrow.
You're giving people more credit than I do.
The whatchamacallit. When the crisis first began, when the financial crisis first began, there was a process of just throwing crap up against the barn wall to see what sticks. And a guy named Edward Pinto works at AEI. You know, I think he's an intellectual, completely intellectually dishonest. His process was, it was Acorn's fault. Acorn caused the crisis. When that didn't get any traction, it was the Community Reinvestment Act that caused the crisis. When that didn't get any traction, it was Fannie and Freddie caused the crisis. That started to get traction, but for the wrong reasons. And it was subsequently by people who understood the data, understood Fannie and Freddie as a standalone company, chase profits. They weren't the cause. They were the effect. So that got disregarded. And now the way this has morphed has been, well, government housing policies were a significant part of the crisis. And it's just whatever works, whatever ducks the radical deregulation blame is what they're doing. This is the same exact thing. Instead of saying, look, let's have an intelligent discussion about policy. And, you know, there shouldn't be a pledge. There shouldn't be let's drown the government in a bathtub. It should be, hey, we're adults. The country is 200 plus years old, almost 250 years old. Why don't we have an intelligent discussion in the country about priorities, about where we want to spend, about, you know, what we want to sacrifice, what we're willing to do. That sort of conversation just hasn't taken place. For a brief moment when Ryan was nominated, I thought we were going to have a legitimate debate on
He thought so too, and he still wants to. I think we're going to see this story written about the conflict with Paul Ryan and the Romney campaign. We've already heard some leaks that Ryan's like, let me out.
But you know, he's not the top of the ticket. He's there.
Sure, right.
He's there for other reasons. You can't, whatever he says, it's secondary. Other than here's a guy who wants to voucherize Medicaid and privatize Social Security. So why would a guy like Romney, who has to have Florida, put him on the ticket? That was stunning to me, because you're basically taking a leaning Republican state, turning it to a leaning Democrat state.
When he announced that, would it have been if he had selected Rubio?
Rubio would have given him Florida. It would have given him
a great speech, I think.
Right, it would have given him a number of other positives. I was kind of surprised he didn't go with Rubio.
All right, we're out of time, unfortunately. Barry Ritholtz, the great Barry Ritholtz, at Ritholtz on Twitter. Read the Big Picture blog like everybody else, or you're left out.
I apologize for the math.
And of course, get his book, Bailout Nation, How Greed and Easy Money Corrupted Wall Street and Shook the World Economy. Barry, as always, thank you. Appreciate it. I missed you.
Let's do this again
next week or whenever you want.
2014, absolutely.
Everybody loves Barry Ritholtz.
Not red, not blue. Red, white, and blue.
Red, white, and blue.
POTUS,